Let's talk about Tariq's new retrospective. He's back, hey, back in the retrospective game.
I'm back in business.
I never even watched the show The Weekenders, but watching your retrospective on it, I'm like, oh, this looks good. I should watch this. I've never seen it.
Fam, I love The Weeknd. It started out because I just kind of, I had a different video that like, I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to do this. I was like talking to Deli about it. And then one day I just kind of woke up and I said, I want to watch The Weeknders. So I asked for it. Like I asked for like, if anybody had the files, and then I just kept going and I started taking notes. I was like, oh, I'm doing this. So I kept going, started taking
That's
notes.
That's the best
and
way
then,
to start a video.
Yeah, when you just kind of fall into it.
Yeah.
It's kind of just fell into it. And then, yeah, I think it's, I'm like one of the like annoyingly modest people, but I think it's like the best video I've ever done. Like I'm very proud of it.
I think it's easily your funniest video. I was laughing the whole time. It's great. It's great. Yeah, it's really good. If y'all haven't checked out his Weeknders retrospective, go check that out. What else we got to talk about? We got...
While we talking videos, you hit trending.
Yeah, I did. I forgot. I forgot, actually, about the show we're going to talk about today. And right. Stupidly, once again, forgot to plug the podcast in there. I'm the worst. I'm the literal worst. To be fair, though, I recorded that video on close to no sleep while I was out of town in a closet in an Airbnb.
I didn't know all of that.
So, yeah, it's a miracle that I even got it done. And then it's crazy. It's easily the fastest viewed video I've ever had. And it also hit the trending YouTube page, which is a thing that has never happened. I don't think it'll ever happen to me again. Hit a million in a week. In 1 week, it hit a million, which is crazy. What else do we talk about? We should talk about the Bob's Burgers movie. Did we talk about that on here yet?
No, maybe. I don't know. All I know is ever since they announced it, like a year ago, I haven't been able to shut up about it just because I am obsessed with the fact that it's going to theaters and I really want to know how it looks.
That's the other, you know what? That's what happened is last time we did an episode, we talked about animated TV movies, like movies based on TV shows going to theaters and how that's not a thing. And then like 2 days later, they announced the Bob's Burgers movie is officially for sure going to theaters. So that was nice timing.
You know what's another one? Because we were talking about TV shows in general, is like making movies coming out in theaters. There's a Sopranos movie coming out. Like
that's
October
right.
1st.
I forgot. And that's going to theaters.
Yeah, in theaters.
I thought that was a show.
No, it's a prequel film.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, they shot
that. Is
that
yeah.
They shot that here because it's
takes place there, right? It's called is it called the Saints of Newark?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wild. Are you in that? Do you get a cameo?
I ain't saying yes and I ain't saying no. What Andrew Garfield say? I haven't gotten a call.
There might be photos of me on set, but I never got a call. Never got a call about it.
It's just the biggest game of semantics. They probably just emailed them. Like, hey, come in today. Okay.
Yeah. They texted him about it.
Yeah. I've not gotten a call, though.
That's funny. But yeah, I'm stoked. Bob's Burgers in theaters. Many Saints of Newark in theaters. Get more stuff based on TV shows in the movie theater.
I would love it. I wonder what's going to happen if this Bob's Burgers movie does really well. Like, I wonder if anything's going to be different. Like, I wonder if people are going to go, let's do that then.
It's also a musical, which is right. Like that's what the South Park did. It's like I and also Bob's Burgers has so much music in it. It's kind of like,
yes.
I feel like it's not talked about enough for how much music is in Bob's Burgers.
No, it's not necessarily the thing people go to and notice.
Yeah. And then also, obviously, Lauren Bouchard went on to make Central Park for Apple TV Plus, which is fully a musical, which I haven't watched yet, but I've heard is very, very good, and I'm gonna start watching.
I've seen a few episodes, and it's really rad.
Got to check that out. I like that. Like animation is actually, obviously, with like the history of Disney and stuff, animation is like great for musicals. So it's kind of interesting that we don't get that in television much. I guess it's more of a theatrical thing that they do animated musical stuff.
Right, because I think it started out as two things. Like when shows started going to theaters, it started out as either we have to do the musical thing because Disney did it. So that's like the Rugrats movies, where like,
are those Rugrats musicals?
Yeah, and they aren't inherently musical shows, but like the first movie has a lot of songs, the second one does, and the third one has less songs.
Man, I think I only saw the first one in theaters.
The first one's my favorite one.
I don't remember there being music in it, but I do remember a lot about it. Reptar, what is it called? The Reptar truck or whatever?
The Reptar wagon. Busta
Rhymes.
Reptar
wagon. Yeah. And then that introduced Dill, right? That was the whole Dill introduction. Yeah. That was a big deal.
Kareem, can I ask you, because you just watched it, does Doug's first movie have any songs in it?
No, I don't think. No, I don't think so. Actually, that's true. It doesn't. So yeah, that's a good point. Doug's first movie is one of the only ones that just kind of went like, never mind.
And ironically, it's a Disney. It was like they gave him a movie right when he went to Disney, and they didn't do music.
But I think that might be why they didn't do music, because like Disney knew that they didn't have to. But like something like Rugrats right was kind of like, well, Disney's doing this and they're doing really well, so let's just do that. So it started out as either that, or sometimes it would just be like South Park. I mean, yeah, those are the musical guys, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is kind of parody a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, we're going to theaters, we're doing an animated movie, let's just put
make it a musical stuff in.
Yeah,
it reminds me of that. And they'd already done a lot of music in the show too, so right, like, yeah. And their first movie was Cannibal the Musical, the one they made in college. So like they like musicals.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They do a joke in the first Billy and Mandy movie where like they just start singing out of nowhere. And it's a really great scene though, but they just start singing out of nowhere. And like they're talking to Billy and they're like, well, what is this even about? Like, why are you singing? And he says, well, there's always songs in animated movies, so we have to. Like, that's just kind of something, right. I guess that's just something that everybody kind of thinks that they have to do. And then like by the 2000s that just kind of everybody just kind of stopped that. So then you get like the Recess movie, the Arnold movie, SpongeBob right movie. Like, yeah, after a while it was just like, oh, let's just put them on the big screen, who cares.
Yeah. And then even now it's like Disney's obviously in the last like 10 years had a bit of a resurgence, but it seems like they alternate. Mm-hmm. They'll do a musical and then they'll do a non-musical. You'll get your Tangled, and then you'll get your Wreck-It Ralph, and you'll get your Moana, and then you'll get your what else do they do that's not
musical? Big Hero 6.
Big Hero 6, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Utopia. Yeah. Which is cool. Which Zootopia. One? Oh, Zootopia. Right. Zootopia. Yeah.
The Zootopia, right. Zootopia does that, and like, Moana. That like Shrek inspired like ends with a dance party thing that like every animated
true
movie suddenly
the Shakira,
oh, it does.
Right?
Which was like, by then that was dated. Like this was like 2016, 2017. Like nobody was doing that at that point, but they did it. Yeah, it was pretty
I know
dated.
The song kind of slaps though.
Yeah, I think it was written by Sia actually, who despite her problematic film is still a good songwriter.
But, I thought that was Shakira.
She performs it. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was written by Sia, performed by Shakira.
Got it.
Let me see. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Let's see. Song recorded, written by Sia and some other people I've never heard of. But that's Zootopia is an interesting example. That's kind of the perfect example, because that same year it was Zootopia and Moana in the same year. So they had their non-musical and they had their musical come out.
Oh,
that
it was
year
the same year, wasn't it? Man, when they when they do that same year shit, it always kind of weirds me out. Finding Dory and Inside Out, isn't that the same year?
That might be. I know Good Dinosaur.
It was
no,
it
Good
was
Dinosaur
Inside
Out.
And Good Dinosaur. That's what it
that's
was.
Right. That's what it was. That's what it was.
Onward and Soul. Right.
That's right. Yeah. That was the same year. Yeah.
Man, did you see the Pixar announcement and like the Turning Red and the Lightyear movie are coming out like 4 months apart? That's
yeah,
so
it's
weird
getting closer. It's getting closer.
So close.
And closer.
There is a very, very slim chance that they will be in theaters at least a week at the same time.
Yeah, they probably will. I think Turning Red looks cool. I like that premise. It's like cute Hulk movie. I'm excited about that. And you know, I'm very intrigued by Lightyear. We'll see what the heck that is, but I'm intrigued.
I think
part of me is like, do we really need more even tangentially related to the Toy Story universe? But the other part of me is like, Pixar space movie, like Pixar space movie, you know? So
it looks like it's just their way of trying to get in front of the Buzz Lightyear cartoon that came out like 20 years ago. Like, yeah, let's just do Buzz Lightyear Star Command.
Well, I'm excited to see how Lightyear is. And, you know, maybe that film, like this podcast, can go to infinity and beyond. Cue theme song.
Gross.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a Family Guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally say f- and diverse.
Let's watch cartoons that curse.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast about cartoons that say swear words. My name is John, a.k.a. Johnny Tuchellos. I'm here with my co-host, Tariq, a.k.a. Toonrific. Tariq, how are you today?
I'm Toonrific.
Have you ever actually said that before?
I've actually always been directly against that kind of speech, but we're doing it today.
I'm gonna start saying that whenever anyone asks me how I am. I'm like, I'm Toonrific, man. Oh, there's a merch idea. I'm Toonrific. But it's me saying it.
Me and Johnny have switched apparel. Johnny has a shirt that says Unity, which if you didn't know is what we need.
If you're watching.
And I have a shirt reminiscent of the BoJack finale. If you're a Cartoons That Curse fan, you may have heard me tell a story about where this shirt comes from. When trying to figure out what I was going to wear, I found it and I said, okay.
Yeah, this is just further cementing the fact that we need merch, so we'll get that going.
Absolutely. Because then we'll have uniforms.
That's right. We should get some jumpsuits. We should get matching jumpsuits. Wear them every time we record.
Can't even see the bottom half, but oh well, it doesn't matter.
They're monogrammed, so mine will say Tuchellos, yours will say Toonrific. It'll be perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It'll be perfect. Oh man. So we are here today to talk about Rick and Morty season 5. We're taking a little break from Archer because Rick and Morty season 5 ended recently. And we figured now's the best time to talk about it. It's fresh in our heads. We both rewatched it for this podcast, and yeah. A whole 10 episodes of Rick and Morty season 5.
We both watched them as they aired.
Yes.
We did.
We both watched them as they aired and then we rewatched them for this. And you know, I've covered Rick and Morty a bit on my channel. This year I tried in season 4 to like do a video for every episode. I was like, oh, I'm going to review every single episode, and it just like made the show not fun for me anymore. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, I have to figure out what I'm talking about every time I watch this show. So this season I was very specifically like, I'm gonna make a video when I have something interesting to say. And I only ended up making 2 over the season, but they both did great, and I'm adopting this methodology now. I'm not forcing myself to talk about Rick and Morty if I don't want to, except absolutely for this podcast. Just kidding. I wanted to do it for this. but season 5. So like, Rick and Morty is now on a pretty efficient schedule, which is great. They used to take so long between seasons, but since their 70 episode renewal after season 3, like it took a while for season 4 to come out, but there was only about 14 months between the end of season 4 and the beginning of season 5, I think. Maybe even less. I don't remember actually. I think it was a little over a year between
the end of season four and the beginning of season five, which is a totally reasonable schedule that I am cool with, instead of 2 years for 10 episodes.
Right. Yeah.
And I think we can expect that to continue because, you know, they were before season five had even come out. I remember Justin Roiland tweeted that they had finished writing season six already. So they're like, they're ahead. Wow, okay. They're ahead of the game. Yeah.
All right.
So the show came back. Let's talk about it. Do you have any thoughts on season five as a whole before we dive into it, or should we save it for the end?
Man. Oh, okay. I guess I'll just be very transparent and say that this is my least favorite one. A lot of these I dragged through a lot of these.
I thought it was my least favorite as well. But the more that I kind of sat on it and let it marinate, I think the good episodes in this season elevate it a bit above season four for me. But it's just because, like, I think it ends really strong. I think the last three of the season are really good. Yeah. And then I love, there's one that I really love in this season, which we'll talk about soon. So yeah, I don't know. I was like, yeah, this is my least favorite season. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, oh, I guess there's more episodes I really like in this season than in season four. So even if maybe season four dragged a little less, like, it feels like maybe the highs are higher in this season. So yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot to say about this season, and I think I still like it. I'm just like, it's just, I don't know. We're like 50 episodes into the show. I'm like, oh man, we got 50 more of these, don't we? we got at least 50 more coming. This is halfway through the show.
That's the thing about it though, is that like the ratio to episodes that I enjoy in comparison to the ratio of ones that I don't is like so low that I don't know if I would say that I like the season, but like at the same time, I wouldn't say that it's like bad TV or anything like that. You know what I mean? It was just kind of like, some of these are kind of boring. Like some of these are just kind of like, I don't really care that much right here. Like, you know what I mean? It was just kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that. And I think a lot of it also just comes down to personal taste and preference, because like even the episodes that I don't love, I like, there's so many of them where like conceptually I respect them. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, is that there's I don't know if there's an episode this season that I don't respect conceptually. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I think even the ones where like, I'm like, man, this is really boring. I think like, great in concept. There's one in particular that like, even I think it's the lowest one on my list, honestly. Let me check. Okay, it's not, but it's like one of the lowest ones on my list, and I think it's a good concept. It's just the way that they did it was kind of exhausting at first, and then I started to get bored. Like, we'll get to that one, but it was just kind of, I found myself doing that a lot with these.
I'm wondering if we feel the same way about this specific episode, because that's like almost perfectly describes one of the episodes on this list for me. which it was like the whole time I was like, this episode's so smart. Why aren't I having fun? this idea is so funny.
I feel bad.
All right. Well, let's start with the first one then, 501. Right. And also forgive us if we flub these titles, because they're just getting more and more ridiculous, which part of me is like, that's annoying. And the other part of me is like, oh no, keep leaning into it. Make them even more convoluted.
I like them when I don't have to say them out loud. Like,
right. Okay. So this first one is Mort Dinner Rick Andre, which is a My Dinner with Andre title parody. And this episode basically has two things going on. Morty is trying to have a date at home with Jessica while Rick is having a dinner with his nemesis, a guy named Mr. Nimbus, who is introduced in this episode.
All right.
So it starts off, actually the beginning is really interesting, because it is kind of a subversion of the usual thing, because Rick is like dying. Rick is about to die, and Morty's saving him, which I think is which I like, as the growth of Morty continues. We see how he becomes more and more, or less and less of just like the sidekick and more of a like almost partner. Obviously Rick kind of looks down on him, but like he's way more capable now. Like he fully saves them in the cold open of this episode.
And while after doing the rewatch, I think contextually for this season, I think that's a good way to start too. Like just yes. knowing where they go later, I was like, oh, okay, they did start like this. That makes a lot of sense.
Agreed. So like he's saving Rick. He actually gives up for a minute and then he calls Jessica to say goodbye to her. And basically she's like, do you want to go out? You want to have a date? And that gives him the motivation to actually save them, right. Landing them in the ocean, which then, introduces us to Mr. Nimbus, which I was trying to think if there was ever a time where they touched the ocean in another episode. I can't think of any where they touched the ocean. So maybe that works canonically is, Rick's nemesis is this like weird horny Aquaman character named Mr. Right, Nimbus, yeah. Who I know some people didn't like him. I think he's funny. I think he's got some funny stuff going for him. He is a little ridiculous, but I love when he comes to dinner and Jerry is like calls the police on him and all the police show up. And they're just like, you can't do that, Jerry. He controls the police. Like, what are you talking about? And he literally makes the police do. He says, fight, fuck, flee. And the police just start fucking each other.
I remember when this aired and he did that bit. I remember thinking, like, that's supposed to be really funny, but it didn't make me laugh. And I remember I said that and you said, I think the text says, boo, that joke was funny.
It was one of the things that made me laugh the most in the episode that first time we watched it for sure. This I think overall is an episode that like is another one that I like. I really dig conceptually, but I didn't like find myself laughing at a lot because I really like the idea of this Narnia, this door to this Narnia world where time moves differently. And like, it's funny to have Rick use something that complicated as just a means to age wine. Like that's so, it's very Rick. It is like crazy brutal. And it's an episode that I think about when I made a video earlier this year before season 5 came out about like Evil Morty. And who we'll talk about later in this, but about Evil Morty and his potential motivations and whether or not I titled the video "Is Evil Morty Actually Evil?" But the point wasn't necessarily to litigate his deeds. It was more to be like, is he evil compared to all of the stuff that our characters have done in this show? Like our Rick and Morty have done a lot of messed up shit, and is what Evil Morty has done worse than what Morty or Rick have done? And I think this is a strong episode that shows that like they're comparable. Morty kind of genocides a bunch of people in this like multiple generations over a bunch of time. And I think the idea is really interesting conceptually, and especially like it's interesting to see Morty just get to his wit's end and he's just like, I just want to be able to do my normal teenage things and all of my sci-fi bullshit is getting in the way. Mm-hmm. and so he just goes full Terminator mode, which is kind of reminiscent of the season 4 premiere where he with the crystal, where he just like starts murdering people so that he can die with Jessica or whatever. But it is like it is interesting because I think these episodes like are important to look at in the context of the show in regards to, you know, what is evil in the Rick and Morty world? What does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
Although there's always the argument you can make is, are these the same Ricks and Mortys that we see every episode, right? Like, do we ever know?
Man, it makes everything really confusing.
It does. Well, and then we'll get into the next episode, which makes that even more confusing. But but how do you have any other thoughts on Mort Dinner Rick Andre? What did you think about the Narnia stuff? You like that world or that plot?
Yo, so when I watched this the first time, I hated that stuff. Like, I was
really
because I just kind of because I don't. Rick and Morty is like a hard show, at least for me, to settle my feet into a lot of the time. Meaning that, like, this is the season opener and they didn't like ease into anything. They just kind of started turning up immediately. And I wasn't fully prepared at first. So when it just like all this stuff kept happening, I'm like, wait, slow down. Like, hold on. Like, I remember feeling like that when it's premiered. So the second time watching this, I did grow an appreciation for all of the, the portal stuff and Narnia stuff. I thought that stuff was really good conceptually. It was much easier to follow for me the second time around as well, but I'm not sure if it was like particularly fun in that regard, but but still, like, there's still stuff to enjoy. I think Nimbus, especially like early in the episode, is animated beautifully. Like, the way they do like these really nuts poses with him, and he's like sticking his neck out and he's making all these faces and expressions. It looks really expressive and it all looks gorgeous. That was definitely a takeaway here. One thing that I noted too that I wanted to ask. So is Nimbus the first person to say Beth's mother's name?
He might have been. It was funny because they did start name dropping Diane this season. Yes. And I feel like I didn't really remember them ever saying her name before this. Mm-hmm. So he might be. I can't confirm that for sure. But it's like the first time that I consciously like really remembered.
Yeah, like
that happening. So
likewise. It was like an Archer thing. Remember, like, last time we recorded, I was talking about how like that was the first time I realized they were in New York because they just kept saying New York.
Right.
Like, I feel like it might be that too. I don't know.
That's right. That's right. You did say that last week. Yeah. But I don't remember the name being dropped. And if it did, it must have been casually in a similar manner to this, mm-hmm. because I don't think there was any real attention drawn to it. Which makes me think that if they're starting to name drop her more, and now obviously at the end of the season, we'll talk about this later, but they do a lot more confirmation of Rick's like true backstory. I expect something with Diane to come up over the next five seasons, you know, like it feels like they've got to explore that. Cause that is one of the major aspects of the show's backstory that is like almost completely untouched. So it feels like they've got to get there at some point.
Yeah. Cause that's the thing, right? Is that, I mean, like, granted, we'll get there later, in the season, but like, they explain what happened to like his original Diane and Beth, but we never hear what actually happens to Diane in the timeline where Beth still exists, right? Like,
that's right, exactly, and that confuses me too, because like that's the interesting thing. Obviously, we'll get into this later, so we're kind of getting into episode 10 of the season territory, but with the confirmation that that our Rick lost Diane and Beth when Beth was very young, they both died. Mm-hmm. But our Rick continues to like go live with abandoned Beths, quote unquote. So like we've obviously saw him at the beginning of the season was with one family, and then he and Morty jump over to another one in episode 6. But what's the deal with the family in those timelines? Is Diane dead or is she around? It doesn't feel like she would be around. It feels like there's something must have happened to her. I think that's something they have to explore at some point, mm-hmm. especially. And honestly, what would be a really smart way to tie that serialized story into another one would be to make that somehow related to Space Beth. Like Space Beth is like such a go-getter badass now. If there's somewhere out there where we're going to learn what happened to Diane, or she needs to learn what happened to Diane, or discover an alternate Diane, it feels like exploring that through this clone Space Beth would be a smart move. Because it feels like they try to tie all the serialized stuff in concisely versus
over the course of the show. They're like, ah, here's 8 episodic episodes and then a couple that are serialized. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It feels like they try to kind of merge all that stuff together, which and honestly, this season sets up a lot of stuff that feels like it can and should be followed up in a serialized manner eventually, even though we know that the show doesn't do that often. So I'm eager to see what they do over the next 50 episodes. That's a lot of episodes. Including the end of this episode. Let's talk about that. The Jessica thing, where Jessica just becomes like fully enlightened, seeing the breadth of the entire universe. That is, I think, a cool, fun ending for this, but also like that has to come back at some point. That and also Jessica never shows up again in this whole season,
at all,
if I'm not
for the
mistaken.
Rest of the season. Yeah, so they barely go back to school. They go back to school for one gag,
right?
Like, in this whole season, and that's
it. And Morty even like complains about how he hasn't been to school in weeks or whatever. It's funny. So I'm like, that's a thread that I'm like, oh, I want to see this come back somehow. Like, I really want enlightened, like third eye opened Jessica to play a role somewhere down the line. When I was working at Nerdist, Justin and Dan came in and did an interview at Nerdist, and they it was before season 3, and they specifically were talking about the serialized story elements, and they were asking them about it, and they kind of went on record as saying, oh, we don't ever put these threads in there with the exact outcome pre-prepared. What they like to do is they plant seeds. They plant little seeds of possibilities for them to potentially harvest later in the show down the line. You know what I mean? Which I think is a fine way to tell your story, because sometimes something too rigidly planned gives you less freedom in what you want to do down the line. There's a lot of ways to write stuff, and obviously you don't, you know, you can pre-plan everything, but to me, this is just an example of that. Like, this is a seed. This is a seed they're planting, and they're just like, we're going to figure out how to grow the Jessica third eye seed later in the show.
Right. There is kind of a slippery slope with that approach to it, just because I'm kind of dipping into territory that, like, my knowledge is a little faint of. So, audience, please forgive me. But from what I remember, a big problem that a lot of people had with Adventure Time mid-run was that it felt like they were just making stuff up as they went along.
Sure.
And I think sometimes when the audience can see that, it could kind of be a little daunting, because I don't even think anybody over at Adventure Time, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody over there even said what they said. Just kind of like, oh, no, we don't have the whole thing planned out. We just kind of plan seed. You know what I mean? Like, but again, too much meticulous planning. Like, nah, they have to say this, and they got to hit this beat at this episode at this point in time. Like, that not only does that, you ever had like food that was overcooked? Like, it kind of has that feeling too. Like, it kind of does that, you know what I mean?
Yes. And you know what, like, I this is just something that's been in my brain a lot this week, as Mikey knows, because I've been texting him nonstop about it, because of the new Matrix trailer. I just rewatched the Matrix trilogy, which I am more of a fan of than ever, truthfully. I've always been a huge fan of the first movie. I was always kind of lukewarm on the sequels, and I'm still not fully embracing the sequels, but I do like especially the second one a lot more than I had before. But that's an example of something where they made the first one and then they were like, all right, we're gonna make the whole thing in this two movie, like, we're gonna make them both at once, and we're gonna plan out the trilogy and make it happen. You know what I mean? They're just like, this is it. And it feels like that. It feels overcooked. Like, there's a ton I love about those movies, but as a complete package, it's like, oh, this is a little overcooked. Like, they're really, really getting into this deep.
Yeah.
I
feel you.
Even though I'm psyched for the next one.
I don't know what the
I don't know how you split the diff on that kind of stuff, man. Because, like, I think about that, and I think about how, like, with certain things, I just kind of love that shit. Like, I love, but again, I don't know. I think it just might be, it might be just planting seeds and then figuring out what you want to do later on. But, like, even, like, in film, right? Like, I don't know, Baby Driver. Like, it almost seems like every single line they say comes back somehow in the end.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of meticulous planning.
I was just going to say that exact word. I was going to say that is a meticulously planned movie.
Yeah, like it takes a lot of that to put that together, but it doesn't feel overcooked. I think about like Regular Show, right? Where there is no way in hell that they had the ending to Regular Show planned from the moment they started the show.
Right.
But I think Regular Show ends with the greatest final piece of dialogue I've ever heard in my life, which is when it ends. Oh, spoiler, I guess, if you care, if you haven't seen Regular Show, yeah. It ended like a decade ago, but whatever. I'm exaggerating. But after they do like the flash forward and they pan out and shows that Pops was watching it on the TV and like the tape comes out and he says, "Jolly good show." I was like, "Oh shit, how did they do that?" it blew my mind. Like, but again, that just kind of seems like somebody was in the room and said, "I think this is probably the best way to end this." It wasn't like JG Quintel just had it in his notes and like, yeah, then he just fucking pops the tape out and he said, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was that.
To me, that is the best. The best way is to have ideas of what you want to do, but not to be too rigid with them as the show evolves. Because part of making a TV show is not just having the idea and having these ideas planned out, but also seeing in execution how it actually plays out, how your perception of those things changes based on how the actors deliver lines, things change. Mm-hmm. Even perception wise over the course of making a show, like a character can be intended to be one way, but over the course of a performance from an actor can change the entire how the character is perceived or how the character even is ended up being written. So like, to have a beginning and end written ahead of time, to me, you know, it depends on what the thing is. But I think in a show, to some things, it can be detrimental. And I kind of like when a show is able to evolve and grow with its viewers based on, you know, how it's perceived and how you make it and how your mind changes when it's being made. I think. And also because of the nature of television, you have to be a little flexible because you don't always know how long it's going to go. So, obviously they're pretty lucky here at Rick and Morty because they know they have at least 50 more episodes. So maybe they're just going to write to that 100 episode mark and say, that's it. So who knows? Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
You know what that's like? I just thought about it, and it's a show that I didn't even watch that much, but I just know that this was an issue afterwards. I think partially I learned this from talking to my friend Nerdstalgic. How I Met Your Mother. Mm. Like, they like had that, because the whole thing, I guess, is just to tell, like, just like the telling of a story or whatever. So they had the kind of the ending planned and essentially filmed, you know what I mean? Like, not the entire finale, but I think maybe like the flash forward scenes. I'm not really too sure, but I just remember people feeling as though the way that it ended didn't really stay true to who the characters ended up becoming. Which, like, yeah, because they kind of went in saying like, all right, we telling this story and we trying to get to this specific spot, not realizing that the writers may favor certain characters or favor certain relationships. Like, that might just end up happening. You have a room full of people because it's all collaborative. You come in with your pitch Bible. Yeah, sure. But like, you don't write the whole thing by yourself, and you don't act the whole thing out by yourself. You know what I mean? Like, it is really collaborative and things evolve. You're absolutely right.
For sure. Yeah. And that's like, and that's the balance you have to figure out is, you know, obviously if you're making a mini series, or if you're like, oh, I have a show and it's got three seasons and it's already written, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're doing an ongoing show, things can change over the course of making that show. So it's a thing. It's a whole thing. But let's move on. Let's move on to the next one. Because we talked about one episode, and that was a good little television tangent there.
Yeah.
So 502 is Mortiplicity. Is this the one that you liked conceptually but found exhausting?
Yes, it is.
I wrote that down as well, even though I was thinking about an additional one that made me feel that way. There's two this season that made me feel that way in particular.
Okay.
But this one is such a cool idea, such a cool concept, but truly is like, wow, this is a lot and it's exhausting. And
yes,
this is especially the episode that basically,
first act, man,
right? Yeah. This, for those who don't know or don't remember, this is the episode that reveals that Rick has created decoy families, which are basically android versions of their family to protect them in case something ever comes after Rick and his family. They come after the decoy family instead, kill them, and then the real family is safe. But as you slowly learn, the decoy families started to make their own decoy families. And all of a sudden, there are just endless decoy families of the Smith family all over. So the one thing, even though I like this concept on the level of the decoy families,
yeah,
I don't understand how this works logistically. Where do all of the decoy families live? Where are all of these alternate exact Smith households?
I thought I was tripping.
If they're not in the same town that they live in, then where? Yeah, like, is that just something he reprograms? I guess they don't address it, but like,
does he just build a decoy town? Like,
right. Ooh. Right, exactly.
All right. I thought I was tripping. All right.
And I do think that, like, I don't know how you address that when you make this episode either. Like, I can't, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I feel like maybe the episode idea is just worth diving deep into and not worrying about that side of things, because that's like a long walk to take. but it is like, the whole time I was just like, wait, what? Like, so there's thousands of decoy families. Where do they live? Where are they? What do they all have? Do they all go to the same school? Like, yeah, did he create the same school? Do like, does Morty have, like, are there decoy Jessicas and teachers and like,
exactly,
all this other,
man,
stuff? Yeah. Like, it's just a lot. I just don't know how that works. But it's still like, again, a very cool sci-fi concept. And it is like, as crazy as the first act is, it is always kind of like, oh, they're, I don't know, every time a decoy family, every time you learn that the family you're following is another decoy family, I was like, oh my God, again.
Yeah.
And it becomes the, like, the game. It's the game of the episode for a minute there. But it is like, after a minute or two, you're kind of just like, okay, how many more decoy families are going to get killed?
And it just goes until literally the end. Until the episode cuts off, it just keeps going. And again, yeah, I think the concept, I think it's a fun concept. I think it's a good concept. But it was kind of like, they throw you in there, which I feel like if you're going to do it, you should throw the audience into it.
Yes,
but still,
I agree.
I don't, that's the thing about this one though, is that I don't know what the hell I would do differently. Like,
right.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I would do different.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes these crazy ideas are just still worth doing. Like, I feel like this is kind of how I felt about the heist episode last year. Which, like, that is another exhausting episode because it is so thoroughly dismantling the heist tropes and just being like, it's heist on heist on heist on heist, like twist on twist on twist on twist. And part of me is like, oh, this is so tiring to watch. And the other part of me is, but like, yeah, but if it wasn't,
Like, if it wasn't that, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, what even, is this even an episode if you're not willing to take that risk? So, like, even if it's true. Something I don't love watching, I'm not like thrilled to watch. It is pretty cool and interesting, and maybe worthy risk to take when you're making a show like this.
No, yeah, I agree. They kind of thrive on these just kind of like escalating dilemma as episodes where like things just get like more and more insane. That heist one has that wild ass bit where they just argue back and forth. Like, I programmed you to think that. Well, I programmed you to think that. Like, you know what
yes.
I mean? Like,
yes.
It just keeps going. Which I don't remember where I landed on that bit back then, but I think it's funny.
It is funny. My favorite part of the episode is still the end when Morty goes to pitch his Netflix show or whatever. And he's just
like, does end like that.
And the guy's just like, pretty crazy day, huh? The sky turned into a wall. And Morty's just like, yeah, that was actually an adventure I was having earlier. I think that's a really funny way to end the episode.
But then he attributed to like the traffic or something. Like, it was something like really mundane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Morty's like, it took me a while to get here because I was coming from the hologram wall that appeared in the sky. And the guy's like, yeah, try coming down from Malibu. I think we talked about that last time, but it's a funny enough joke to mention again. It's good.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But yeah, like, so again, I feel similarly. Like, this is a cool episode. I think it's a worthwhile episode. I'm glad it exists. It's not one I love watching. It's kind of
right.
my take.
Yeah,
on
likewise.
It. Yeah.
There's some great design work in this one. I noted the wooden decoys first. I think I like how they look first of all, but I love their sound design. Like, I love like the voice box, like tone that they put on their voice when they speak.
Yes, I agree.
I think that sounds really rad, and I fucking love the Muppet designs. The Muppet designs.
Dude, the Muppet ones are great.
So good. good.
The gross like scarecrow Rick is frightening. Like, that is a frightening design.
It was a pretty terrifying design.
Yeah, that's I guess the other thing is the episode is like, I love the concept with all of the decoys. The third act, when they go through all these other like weird little sub like families, it gets a little tiring. Like, that part isn't as, it's not as exhausting, but it's I found it a little uninteresting. But they're, like you said, designs are great. Although, God, right. I have a problem with the skinless character thing. It reminds me of when they cut Sideshow Bob's face off, and ever since they've like, I hate it, man. It makes me feel so gross whenever they have his like skin flap fall off. I'm like, oh, I don't need to see that. I get it, but I don't need it.
Just one of those that like, oh man, we're talking about The Simpsons, but that was one of those. They do a couple things every once in a while in The Simpsons where I just kind of go, you're literally breaking the world. Like, that is not Simpsons. And that Sideshow Bob thing where he took his damn face off wasn't Simpsons. And it's just like a Treehouse of Horror thing. But it happened for real.
Exactly.
Like, really. Exactly. Like, and I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I'm on the same page there. I don't know. I mean, I also just have, I just get weirded out. But like, I feel like a physical grossness to that kind of like body, like that body horror type of style of stuff. Yeah.
But I feel like the world that they set up, just doesn't make any sense to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's saying a lot because it does get stretched. But again, I feel like it gets stretched for like joke purposes or whatever. Like,
yeah.
This was like a story thing.
Yeah, like, to this episode's credit, that's something that is fully believable in the world of Rick and Morty for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's, you know, it's, you can't harp on them for that exact same reason, but
yeah, it's gross. I don't like how it looks. It makes me feel bad.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't. I'm with you. It's not like I'm not like. Like I could still like tolerate it, but I'm not a fan. You know what I mean? Right. Like I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I could do without it.
For sure. All right, you got any other thoughts on Multiplicity before we move on to three?
I know. Let's do it.
All right, a Rick convenient Mort. I love this episode. This is the first one I made a video about this season, and I didn't expect this one to be the one that I loved going in. I was like, oh, they're doing a Captain Planet thing. Like, what the heck is this going to be? But they take such an interesting angle with it. They didn't just parody Captain Planet. They gave this idea that like it's a combined with like this intense, passionate infatuation, like a teenage love situation with Morty and Planetina. And I thought they really, really effectively told this story. Like this is to me the most emotional episode of the season, and one of the most emotional of the whole show. Is this one like really gets me good? And it aired the same week as probably my favorite Tuca and Birdie episode. So it was back to back, just like the Nighttime Friends episode.
Oh but man, that episode's such so
a
rad.
Good, such a good Adult Swim week. God, it was just the best back to back episode watch
that
ever. It was
good.
So good.
That episode's good. Okay.
Yeah, that was man. I really hope Tuca and Birdie runs for a while because I could definitely get used to like the back to back Tuca and Birdie Rick and Morty thing. That's a nice Sunday. But so what I love about this episode is that like it really portrays this kind of like it portrays love as much as it portrays like this like infatuation. I don't know if you've ever it's like an infatuation that feels like love. It's like this really intense burning like, oh my God, I am so like infatuated and so like connected to this person. And you see Morty just like go through this whole process of growing to know someone and both of them like, you know, and also just like we've seen Morty so often like struggle in dating and to see it be reciprocated so thoroughly. They both were just so into each other. And you really feel the growth of it. And it's not like, I think one of the things I got some comments on my video that were critical of it because it was not a well-developed relationship, but I think that's just completely missing the point of what this was. This wasn't supposed to be a relationship in which they like truly grew to know and understand each other deeply, which is what the crux of the like climax is.
That's why it falls apart.
Exactly, because they fell so deeply, they were so deeply infatuated with each other. They were so into each other that they didn't realize that they weren't necessarily on the same page on a like fundamental and spiritual level. Like there was an oversight in that process because they didn't truly know each other that well yet. And so once those things started to reveal themselves, like the end is so heartbreaking because Morty doesn't want to break up with Planetina. He doesn't want them to break up. He is still deeply, deeply infatuated with her. He cares about her deeply. He just feels that they fundamentally are mismatched. He feels like he has no choice and he has to end things because he doesn't feel right on a fundamental level with what's happening in their relationship. And so like that last scene is so heartbreaking because like, yeah, Morty broke up with her, but you know how much that pained him. You see how much it pained him. Man, that last, and the last shot is just like, so there's so many good shots in the end in that last scene. There's a shot where he's hanging out the window talking to Planetina and they're like kind of relitigating everything and talking through it. And she's just like, she wants to stay with him and he just feels like he can't. But behind him, you see the wilting, flowery Morty head that she made for him. And it's just like perfectly behind him. And then when she leaves and she says, fuck you, and you watch him looking out the window and you see her like supersonic away.
it's and then the shot, the one of the shots that fucks me up is him laying in bed. It's like the angle, the angle.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's a good shot too. Which I want to even dial it back a bit, because you brought up when she says fuck you and goes off. That read is crazy. Like, I didn't, you know, when the episode came out, it was censored. I just watched it uncensored for this. That read is crazy. Like, it's so heartbreaking.
I actually haven't watched it uncensored. No, because I watched it on Hulu Live, so it's still censored on there. So I gotta check those out uncensored.
The way that that read is nuts. Like, the way she said that, like, it contextualizes the episode different. Watching it uncensored, I'll say that.
I'm gonna check that out ASAP. That's an Alison Brie performance as the guest star, who is excellent. Love Alison Brie. I've been a big fan ever since Community, but obviously BoJack is one of my favorite shows ever, and she's excellent as Diane. Great performance as Planetina. She does such a good job, sort of like in these moments where she is like heartbroken. Not only for Morty, but there are scenes where she's heartbroken over what's happening to the planet, as she they take this like such a realistic approach to the Captain Planet idea, where she is literally like in pain because of the damage being done to the planet. And so her reactions are, you know, in conjunction with how intense that feels to her, and her delivery in the lines where she's just like, can't you see there's no time, the planet is dying. She is such a good actress. Her delivery in those sequences are so well done. I really like this episode. I think it's good.
The read from Morty when right when he's like about to storm out the house, and he tells Beth like, I'll never forgive you, and like everybody everybody like sighs when I speak because they feel like it's just a chore to hear. Like, it's so good.
Justin Roiland. I think Justin Roiland, we don't talk enough about how good of a voice actor he is. Playing both Rick and Morty obviously is like crazy and a lot. Sorry, I have a fly flying around me. Playing both Rick and Morty is obviously a lot, but like that is just highlights how good of a performance he can give as either of those characters. And that is a like emotion driven performance, not only in that sequence, but then obviously in the end when he's crying to Beth. Both such emotional scenes and such great deliveries. Love this episode. There's so much to like about it. And then, obviously, like, and it's even fun in the ways that they like parody and dismantle the whole Captain Planet idea. Like the idea that the Captain Planet kids are instead these like exploitative, managers who are like, well, we got to figure out how we make money on you, Planetina. Like, let's figure out all of your press briefings and all of your like, you know, and all of that stuff. She's a brand more so than she is a person. And that's just already an interesting idea. It's cool. I guess we should also talk about the B plot of like Rick and Morty or Rick and Summer going on all of these like end of the world benders. They keep going to different worlds that are about to end entirely and just going on like drug and sex fueled benders.
Which I wrote that I like that both plots are about love.
They are. Yeah. And they both kind of subvert a lot of the things about the show that we knew. Like, this one is all about Morty truly finding something that he likes and then having to give it up himself. And then Rick is a character who we wouldn't necessarily expect to just like fully embrace something like he did in this episode, and he does. And so I think it's interesting how they decided to go that route. Their story is a little bit more played for humor, gross out humor and stuff. There is some there's funny that, stuff.
There's that really great line where the people are pissed that the world isn't going to end anymore. So she's the one who saved the world. Now we have to go to work tomorrow.
And you get the guy who
You get, there's the guy who had sex with his dad and he has to go back to work with him. So the tag is just like, mom's not talking to us because we had sex. It's like, I know people get real, like people had problems with that, but is the delivery and execution is very funny. It's very funny. There's a lot of things this season that people would just like had fundamental issues with, and I was kind of like, yeah, but it's funny. It's funny though. Yeah, do you have any other thoughts on Rick Convenient Mort? This is, I just love this episode. It's one of my favorite episodes of the whole show.
This one's really good, man. It's really good. It was the first one, because I'm not gonna lie, when it could be pretty apparent now since you just listened to us talk about two episodes, but when the season first started, when I was watching it live, I just remember thinking like, yeah, I don't know if I wasn't feeling the first two, but this one I was like, oh, okay, no, they literally took all the elements of the show that I really, really like, and they threw them into one. And I think it's rad. I love this one a lot.
Yeah, it's really good. It's one of those endings that I just like. It's one of those endings in Rick and Morty that I love, where they actually let it linger on the emotional or serious note. And it's a thing we've talked about a lot in this podcast, and it's actually a thing I just talked about. I guested on an LS Mark video about Rick and Morty, where I talked about how I think the show can be so effective when it's willing to linger and sit on these emotional moments and not undercut it with a joke, which we even talked about last week in the Archer thing, because we were talking about how Archer will undercut everything with the joke. But it works for Archer because that's what the show has established. That's just what the show is. But Rick and Morty, having established how effective lingering on an emotional beat for the end can be, or lingering on any serious moment can be, it can be frustrating when it feels like they have an opportunity to do that and choose to joke about it. You know, and granted, at the end of the day, it's a comedy show and they should make the show how they want. But it is a thing where I'm like, oh, I like these moments work so well for me that I wish we had more of them, you know?
Yeah, fill it up.
So this is one of the best examples of it, I think. One of the best examples of an ending note just like really punching you in the gut, which I'm sure you listening at home have noticed is a recurring thing that Tariq and I enjoy about our cartoons.
I want to cry.
But speaking about gross stuff that people have fundamental issues with, let's move on to the next episode. yeah. 504 is called Rick Dependence Spray, which in context is gross. So this is the episode. I don't even really know how to describe this episode, but basically it starts with Morty using at the horse hospital a device to extract semen from horses. and then Rick does, I don't even know if I comprehend what was going on with this sci-fi premise, but basically, man, Rick's gonna do something with that. And because it's not horse semen, it's actually Morty semen. It creates all of these giant sperms who start attacking the Earth as like a monster movie type of thing, which just gets wildly out of hand by the end of the episode, obviously.
It's a nasty joint.
It's a nasty episode. I don't think this episode deserved the kind of like rejection that people gave it, because obviously there is like the whole thing at the end of the episode. The end of the episode ends with them creating a giant incest baby.
Right.
A giant incest baby in space.
And it's the worst part of the episode.
people hate that concept, but I'm like, it's not like they were advocating for it. The whole point of the episode is to prevent that from happening. Yeah. They're like, we don't want this to happen. They are anti-incest baby. Right. And honestly, I think it's kind of funny. I don't know. I think it's funny.
Fam. All right. So one thing I've deducted from doing this podcast is that there are two things that I like that Rick and Morty does. When it's really grounded and lingers on emotion, and when it's fucking gross. Like, I love this one, and what's that other one that everybody hates? The dragon one?
The dragon one. Dude, so there's funny gross, stuff dude. In the dragon one. It's I literally, so one of my most quoted lines as delivery is just, yeah, so we can fuck woolly mammoths. It's so funny. I know people hate that episode, but that's funny. I'm sorry.
Man, it's so, this episode right here, man, I remember when this came out, I just remember fam, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's so gross. It's so nasty. Like, and everybody was like, ew, what are they doing? I'm not feeling this one. I'm like, what are you, it's so sick. But again, that's probably just me. I wrote my first, my first note for this episode. I got a lot of stupid notes for this episode. My first note for this episode says nasty joint with like 10 exclamation points.
Yeah. I like,
and then they do, which is like, I can't remember the other show that does. Oh, Futurama. Okay, they do this in Spanish Fry. Where they just keep doing the dick talk.
Yeah,
like
that's
everything
true.
Is just like is just they just keep going and they do it. Here, it's the president. The one I wrote down was the president saying, Morty, you've always been a straight shooter. Like, you can't prove that. And then they kept piling them on to the point where my third note is so much dick talk with more exclamation points.
it is a wild episode, but I do think people got so caught up in just like the fundamental issue with the incest baby that they like weren't willing to appreciate that. Like, it's gross, but it's funny. Like, it's a funny episode. It's not one of my favorites. It's not one of my favorites of the season, but it's like, I don't think it deserved, like, I don't think it deserved the kind of derision that people gave it immediately. And it gave me one of my favorite deliveries of the whole season. It's one of the only things I wrote down for this episode. And it's the beginning. They do the cold open and establish that Morty's gonna like use the machine to jerk off, basically.
Then
they have him like sitting up on the roof and he just goes, Morty, you dirty little doggy.
It's so gross.
It's so gross.
What's the man? I forget who the guy is that they go with. But Rick and Morty go with this guy, and then the guy's dying. And he says, I'll make love to my wife one more time, get the picture of her out.
That's right.
He says, I know how to suck myself. It's so gross.
That bit was wild. So he's like, that's a photocopied photo of Sports Illustrated model so and so or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's my wife, we have sex. It's the first thing he says. It's so funny. And then it turns out it was. In the end, it was. They reveal that it was.
Yeah. She's like, I heard you're with my husband.
Yeah.
And then, because I think he has like a drawers on or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he's got, and he's got like, a thong on.
And he says, yo,
don't tell her. Yeah, and she's like, was he wearing my thong? You can tell me, even if he told you it was.
Always be honest. She's giving him mad game. Always be honest. Just like, even if it hurts people, you have to always be honest.
Right.
Yeah, nah, he had them on. I'm fucking sick. Gross ass.
I think it's a funny episode, man. I think it's funny.
It's really funny. The one thing, story-wise about this, that I actively dislike because it's something that I just actively dislike in general. In media, but in particularly animated media, because they seem to do it a lot. Maybe because there's less women working in animation in ratio to the dudes. But I really hate the let the men handle this narrative, and then it always ends the exact same way. The women always save everyone, and then they just kind of like the dudes never really learn anything. Like, you know right. what I mean? I just think it's lame, and I think it's tired.
Yeah, like, it feels like it's not a clever subversion anymore. It's just like, well, do we really need to frame it around this same thing where it's like, you know what I mean? It's like,
Just give us a story where the women save everyone. We don't need to like frame it around the like, you know, around the like, oh, let's the men handle it. And then, yeah. It feels like that's a little old. It's a little old timey at this right. point. It's been done. Yeah.
I can't remember where this is in my ranking. All I know is, and even on my second rewatch, I didn't have as much fun as I had the first time. Cause the first time I don't know why I get so excited when Rick and Morty does nasty shit, but I got so hyped. I was like, oh, they're doing this? Ew, let's go. I don't care. Whatever.
And, yeah, man. People hate it.
I'll tell you, I'll give you one more. A couple episodes later, the baby comes back.
Yeah.
I didn't see that episode when it aired. Oh, so I had no idea the baby came back. You know,
and it comes back in such a like, honestly, I rewatched that one today and there was a whole section that I think I must have like fallen asleep during and never rewatched because there's like the whole section where Summer, we'll get to it, but the whole section where Summer is explaining how she like was taken to Mars to meet the baby again. I forgot. I like didn't remember any of that shit. And it's pretty wild. And that's interesting. We'll talk about it when it comes up, but that's so interesting because the show is so non-serialized for them to so directly bring back something that had just happened. It's almost like this is this like a part two of right. the incest baby episode. We know you were going to hate that. So they're back. Great point, Tariq and or John. And that is actually going to wrap up our first half of this week's episode. So if you're listening at home, we're finishing up. If you're listening at home, the second half will release on audio platforms next week. But here's the deal. At some point here, we're going to be launching a Patreon. And if you sign up for the Patreon, you can watch the full version of this episode on YouTube 1 week before the second half drops on audio platforms and before that video goes public on our YouTube channel. So it's another little perk for you to sign up for our Patreon. Tariq, do you think they should sign up for the Patreon?
Absolutely not. Not because it would help me and you, but because I feel like they will be getting a bang for their buck, as the kids say.
Great point, Tariq. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank our producer and editor, Michael Yunez, for always doing a great job helping us make this podcast. I want to thank Carrie Feek for our amazing artwork. I want to thank Jake Neutron for our incredible theme song. I want to thank you, Tariq, for co-hosting the podcast with me. And and thank you, the audience, for listening and watching along. So
well, thank you to you for being a great A mic. Okay.
I appreciate that. I do sometimes think I talk too much, but you know, maybe we wouldn't have a podcast if I didn't. So
see, there you go. That's the right way to think. You don't rely on my conversation skills? I don't think so.
All right, and with that, thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.